Welcome back. It's the final day of November 2018. I'm your host, Mark Kahn. Let's talk about a week that had no shortage of interesting, even alarming, and yet downright disgusting events, although most of them we have and certainly should have seen coming for quite a while. Because literally all of the major stories, especially when the waste stream was touting them, sounded like things that we've been talking about here for so long that they're finally getting around to admitting actually might matter. Like the mercenary migrant invasion in Tijuana, where the locals certainly seem to have had enough. Like more rapes in Europe committed by migrants. Latest one was in Italy. Whoops, sorry, I can't really say that. The latest one that the waste stream decided was worth reporting. And did you know George Soros was a criminal? And more countries are figuring that out and kicking him out. Like Turkey this week. The same thing goes for non-existent man-made global warming, which your host has been saying for a long time people will soon be praying for. And we're closer by the day to when that can no longer be hidden. So the waste streams decided to trickle some of those stories out little by little. And meanwhile, the other big stories, the proxy war in the Ukraine versus Russia, World War III in the wings, and the continuing slow-motion invasion now of the southern United States via the various mercenary migrant caravans coming up through Mexico, continue, but more quietly, while we wait for the next shoe to drop. And I guess the same thing's true for the slow-motion economic meltdown, although there are more and more harbingers on that front. It's just that for the most part, Americans are now so ignorant of economics, they won't recognize them until, as I've been saying for quite a while, the shelves at Walmart one of these days turn out to be empty. Surprise, surprise. We'll touch on all of those updates here in a couple of minutes, but arguably the real news today has to do with the continuing war against what's left of the rule of law. So we'll start with one of the highest profile criminals out there, masquerading as a special prosecutor, a.k.a. witch hunter, Robert Mueller, who still seems really embarrassed that he can't find any actual evidence linking the other team to the crimes that he and Team Hitlery actually committed. You know, election manipulation, treason with Russia, that kind of thing. So he's lashing out. Here's one example. 2 months after Paul Manafort announced he would cooperate with the you-know-what in his probe, yeah, sure, of Russian collusion as part of a guilty plea, because evidently the alternatives were worse, the ex-Trump campaign chief has again found himself in hot water, say the stories, with a late Monday filing by persecutors accusing Manafort of lying in the Russia investigation. Yes, that's their job. In the latest just-filed joint status report, says Zero Hedge, Robert Mueller alleges that after signing the plea agreement, in which Manafort agreed that if he engages in any criminal activity prior to sentencing, he would be in breach of the agreement, quote, Manafort committed federal crimes by lying to the federal bunglers of investigation and the special counsel's office on a variety of subject matters, unquote, which they claim constitute breaches of the agreement. If you want to lie, obviously you'd have to be an FBI agent rather than just talking to one, unless, of course, you're able to run for president on the socialist platform. As the WAPO notes, the apparent collapse of Manafort's cooperation agreement is the latest, what they call stunning, turnaround in his case, exposing the longtime Republican consultant to more than a decade behind bars after having already caved and pled guilty in September on charges of cheating the Internal Revenue Service, violating foreign lobbying laws, which only apply, of course, if you're not on Team D, and attempting to obstruct justice. I guess the same thing applies there. And you know what, folks? I watch this stuff, and it really is hard not to be cynical when you realize the real criminals are the ones that are getting away with this while alleging to investigate others for their very own crimes. Here's at least one revealing comment from Barton Gellman, who said, no way to know how bad this is for Mueller, but it can't be good. Manafort will be hammered, as if he hadn't been already, but the public import seems to be that the special counsel has lost evidence he expected to obtain, or at least he expected to coerce. Anything Manafort did cough up may now be tainted by new charges that he's a liar, unquote. And I guess he's in good company, folks. And yeah, anything he coughs up was already tainted, but at least it's becoming more and more obvious just what a circus this, like so many other things in the swamp, has turned out to be. The special witch hunter now demands that Manafort be sentenced immediately, and ironically, in response, while Manafort has said he provided truthful information and doesn't agree with the government's characterization or that he's breached the agreement, he also agrees that there's, quote, no reason to delay the sentencing herein, and he asks the court to set a sentencing date in this matter. And as of Friday, the sentencing date was tentatively set for March the 5th. I guess that's what constitutes rapid justice in the District of Criminals swamp. And it does give Mueller time to make up some more charges. The president, for his part, is one of many who can see through this ruse. He blasted Mueller and, quote, angry Democrats in a bunch of tweets earlier today, saying, go back to the Clinton Foundation. In a trio of increasingly angry tweets, says Tyler Durden this morning, President Trump raged at the special counsel as, quote, a conflicted prosecutor gone rogue, lambasting him for doing tremendous damage to our criminal justice system because of his one-sided so-called investigation. Here's the entire quote. The phony witch hunt continues, but Mueller and his gang of angry Dems are only looking at one side, not the other. Wait until it comes out how horribly and viciously they're treating people, ruining lives for them refusing to lie. Mueller, he said, is a conflicted prosecutor gone rogue, and the fake news media bills Bob Mueller up as a saint, when in actuality he is the exact opposite. He's doing tremendous damage, he capitalizes that, to our criminal justice system, where he's only looking at one side, not the other. Heroes will come from this, and it won't be Robert Mueller and his terrible gang of angry Democrats. Look at their past, and look where they come from. And look, folks, where they are trying to take this nation, too. Which brings me to what ought to be the biggest story in this whole stinking morass. One of the best investigative reporters in the entire country, Jerome Corsi, who has refused to cave in to Mueller's inquisition, has decided to stand his ground and not surrender the hill he seems willing to die on. He won't make the deal with the devil. Quote, he said, they can put me in prison for the rest of my life. I'm not going to sign a lie. This from an associate of Roger Stone, who said Monday, Jerome Corsi is refusing to sign that plea deal from the special counsel. Asked by the criminally negligent network in a phone call what happens now that he's had the horse's head put in his bed, but he's still refusing that offer they thought he couldn't refuse, he said, I don't know. Last week, Corsi acknowledged the pressure was on. He was in plea negotiations with the special counsel's office, and earlier this month he said he expected to be indicted for, quote, giving false information to the special counsel or to one of the other grand jury, unquote. But he followed that up on Monday, saying he believed he would be lying by signing the plea agreement because he didn't willfully mislead anyone. He described his experience with the Mueller interrogators as, quote, like being interrogated as a POW in the Korean War. And maybe he means everything but waterboarding there. I did hear an interview where Roger Stone said he'd been subjected to 40 consecutive hours of such torture by the Mueller investigators. You can compare and contrast that with the Hitler-y love-in session if you'd like. During the entire ordeal, of course, he continues to insist that he had no contact with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who your host notes they'd have killed by now if they could, and that, quote, investigators were so mad because I didn't give them what they wanted, unquote. And he claimed further that Mueller's team wanted to keep any plea agreement sealed, a point that particularly incensed him. And by now, folks, we know darn well why they want to keep everything that they possibly can secret. This thing stinks to high heaven. For quite some time now, folks, your host, and indeed many on the alternative side of the web, those that aren't controlled by Big Brother and the Ministry of Truth, have been warning about, well, a precursor to the Mark of the Beast, in particular the Chinese beta test version, the social credit score. Really, socialist credit score is what it is, because it penalizes those who aren't. We've known for a while that various Big Brother-connected public-private partners, like Apple, Gulag, to Facebook, Twitter, and the like, have been not only testing elements of the eventual system, but literally greasing the skids for the coming rollout. And it looks like all of that is several steps closer now, because Bloomberg is starting to try to convince you how wonderful all of this ultimately will be. Unable to move even a single step, says a recent headline, Beijing will judge every resident based on behavior by the end of the year 2020. Yes, says Bloomberg News, China has long experimented with systems that grade its citizens, Ak Tung, rewarding good behavior with streamlined services while punishing bad actions with penalties. But now it says China's plan to judge each of its 1.3 billion people based on their socialist behavior is moving a step closer to reality, with Beijing set to adopt their own lifelong points program by 2021 that assigns personalized ratings for each, well, slave who resides there. As you might guess, folks, I changed the terminology just a bit. The capital city of the communists, it says, will pool data from several departments to reward and punish some 22 million citizens there based on their actions and reputations by the end of 2020, according to a plan posted on the Beijing Municipal Government's website last week. Those with better so-called social credit will get green channel benefits, while those who violate laws will find life more difficult. The Beijing project, it says, will improve blacklist systems so that those deemed untrustworthy, not good party members, will be unable to move even a single step. It's in quotes, according to the government's plan. Xinhua reported on the proposal last week as well, while the report posted on the municipal government's website is dated all the way back in the middle of July. China, though, has long experimented with systems that grade its citizens in order to better control them, rewarding good behavior with streamlined services while punishing bad actions, the things that the socialists don't want you to do, or even think, but Bloomberg doesn't point that part out, with restrictions and penalties. Now here's about the only critical line in the whole story, folks. Critics, they say, note that such moves are fraught with risks, gee, do you think, and could lead to systems that reduce humans to little more than a report card. Yeah, that is putting it pretty mildly, isn't it? But, crows Bloomberg, Beijing's efforts represent the most ambitious yet among more than a dozen cities that are moving ahead with similar programs. Now here, folks, your host stops for just a second. Do you remember back in the days when, well, people still didn't know what democracy was and wasn't supposed to be, but we did have individual states. The concept was called federalism when we had a constitution, and the idea, as you may have heard it put, was that the states were each to be little laboratories of democracy, or actually, better put, republics, where various things could be tested out, and if they worked, other states ideally would say, hey, that was a good idea, and do likewise. And that was back when the metrics of what was better were based on economic progress and improved freedom, as opposed to what works better for the deep state crocodiles to control the peons. Nevertheless, what we're seeing in China is a whole bunch of municipalities that are now laboratories of communism. Kind of like what California has become in the formerly free U.S. Back to Bloomberg's puff piece, Hangzhou, they note, rolled out its personal credit system earlier this year, rewarding pro-socialist behaviors such as volunteer work and blood donations. Whoa, whoa, notice how even their example sounds so wonderful and benign? How about liking and retweeting the right kind of propaganda? So yes, they reward pro-socialist behaviors while punishing those who violate traffic laws and charge under-the-table fees. And maybe I need to say this since Bloomberg won't. How about if they report on facts that Big Brother doesn't want the peons to know? By the end of May, people with a bad socialist credit score in China have been blocked from booking more than 11 million flights and 4 million high-speed train trips, according to the National Development and Reform, SICK, Commission. And according to the Beijing government's socialist plan, different agencies will now link databases to get a more detailed picture of every resident's interactions across a swath of services and monitoring schemes. The proposal calls for agencies including things like tourism bodies, business regulators, which basically means everything, and transit authorities to work together. The tracking of individual behavior, it says in China, has become easier. Hey, thank you, Gulag, as economic life moves online. With all kinds of apps, again, thank you, Gulag, and all of those other centralist socialist networks for making payments, getting loans, and organizing transport part of the equation. Accounts, it says, are generally linked to mobile phone numbers, which in turn, of course, require Big Brother's government IDs. And there you go, folks. Here's your link to the Mark of the Beast. And listen to how Bloomberg summarizes this Orwellian nightmare. And I'll quote it precisely this time. The final version of China's national social credit system remains uncertain, but as rules forcing social networks and internet providers to remove anonymity get increasingly enforced and facial recognition systems become more popular with policing bodies, authorities are likely to find everyone, from internet dissenters to train fare skippers, easier to catch and punish than ever before. Unquote. Yeah, folks, welcome to the gulag, and hey, how do you say Mark of the Beast in Mandarin? Which does finally bring us to the other big news from over the weekend, at least on the war front. The Ukraine, says the coverage from the Daily Mail, is preparing to defend itself from a possible invasion after three of its Navy vessels were captured by the dreaded Russians, who ignored Western calls to release the three Ukrainian naval ships after their crews fired on and captured them near Crimea, where, among other things, a Russian Coast Guard vessel rammed the Ukrainian Navy tugboat under orders to, quote, quash him. For their part, Russia has accused Kiev of plotting with its Western allies to provoke a conflict. And as the week progressed, it looked more and more like they nailed it right there out of the gate. They tried a provocation, and Russia reacted exactly as they said they would. In Ukraine, where armed forces were on full combat alert, President Petro Poroshenko, remember him from the Obama regime, sought Parliament's approval to impose martial law and strengthen national defenses against what they're calling a possible invasion by Russia. Pepe Escobar, via the Asia Times, probably calls it a bit more accurately. He says the latest chaos in the Kerch Strait looks, quote, more like a cheap ploy by desperate neocons than any Russian aggression, because this seems to be all about undermining Trump's next powwow with Vladimir Putin. Oh, and let's cut to the chase here. While this story was written a couple days before, by Thursday, it proved to be exactly correct, because Trump was forced, whether he liked it or not, to cancel the planned powwow with Putin at Buenos Aires at the G20 summit coming up over the weekend. So I guess we do have to say, mission accomplished, neocons. Score one for the swamp. But the background is still important here, because I guess we'll see over the weekend whether Trump has a plan B up his sleeve or not. When the Ukrainian Navy sent a tugboat and two small gunboats on Sunday to force their way through the Kerch Strait into the Sea of Azov, he begins, they knew in advance the Russian response would be swift and merciless. After all, Kiev was entering waters claimed by Russia with military vessels without clarifying their intent or even going through the proper procedures that they'd gone through before. Your host notes, as we talked about yesterday. Their intent, though, was clear, to raise the stakes in the militarization of the Sea of Azov. Kiev announced this past summer their intent to build a new naval base in the Sea of Azov by the end of 2018. And that's an absolute red line for Moscow. Kiev may have trade access to Mariupol, but forget about military access. And most of all, says the author, forget about supplying a Ukrainian military fleet in the port of Berdyansk capable of sabotaging the immensely successful Russian-built bridge to Crimea. Predictably, says Escobar, Western media has been complaining about so-called Russian aggression, the gift that keeps on giving, and blaming Russia for its so-called overreaction, while simultaneously overlooking the fact that Ukraine's incursion was with military vessels, not fishing boats. Russian resolve has been quite visible, as powerful Ka-52 Alligator assault helicopters were promptly on the scene. After Washington and Brussels uncritically bought into the Kiev-Russian aggression hysteria and got the UN Security Council to play along, their captive media continues to ignore another big issue. The Kerch incident is a clear violation by Kiev of Articles 7, 19, and 21 of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. The author then quotes Rostislav Ishchenko, arguably the sharpest observer of Ukraine-Russia relations, in a piece written before the Kerch incident, who said, quote, Ukraine itself recognized the right of Russia to introduce restrictions on the passage of ships and vessels through the Kerch Strait, having obeyed these same rules in the summer. But now, chaos in the Ukraine is the norm, and President Petro Poroshenko is bleeding. The hryvnia is a hopeless currency, Kiev's borrowing costs are the highest level since a bond sale in 2018, and the failed state has been under IMF so-called reform since 2015, with no end in sight. Poroshenko's approval rate barely touches 8%. His chances of re-election, at least before martial law, were virtually zero. So, welcome to the provocation. Thus, says the author, the Kerch Strait incident looks a lot like a cheap provocation, bearing all the hallmarks of a U.S. think tank ploy, and it's automatically interpreted as Russian aggression, regardless of the facts. And as we've now seen, at least so far, they were successful in derailing the upcoming Trump-Putin summit and moving a couple of steps closer to World War III. I have a suspicion, though, that the really interesting and important events at the G20 summit in Buenos Aires probably won't get reported on. Perhaps not at all by the waste stream, but certainly not until things trickle out, maybe next week. I haven't spent too much time so far talking about the southern invasion. We did get the expected skirmish over the weekend. There were rocks and tear gas and the high-profile media stage photos. You've probably seen the money shot. Was it a mother with terrorized children? Or an abuser who should have known better than to put her kids on the front line in a war zone? And the spin varies based on the propaganda source. The interesting news, not being widely reported, is that about a third of the migrants in the caravan are sick, some with deadly diseases, everything from lice and chickenpox to tuberculosis and AIDS. In other words, in spite of the spin, it's not just the 10% or so terrorists and criminals that are a threat. So let's change gears. Lately, folks, your host is among many that have been warning about the coming real climate change, solar-induced as opposed to anthropogenic, and cyclical to boot. Trouble is, it's global cooling rather than what the Al Gorean liars have been hyperventilating about. And it's getting harder and harder to cover up. Even the generally Kool-Aid-drinking Daily Mail had to warn on Monday that ocean circulation in the North Atlantic is at its weakest point in 1,500 years, and also, coincidentally, at levels that previously triggered a mini-ice age, this according to yet another new study, not part of the bought-and-paid-for settled science horse stream. Lots of others have picked up on the University of Hong Kong study as well, especially as they keep trying to spin it as a direct consequence of global warming. Can you believe it? Yeah, we shouldn't. They are trying to cover their bases, but the story does say something along these lines. A weak circulation of ocean waters in the North Atlantic could signify that a mini ice age is just around the corner, exactly like solar scientists and those who can look at 200-year cycles have been saying for quite a while now. Scientists, it said, the kind that aren't bought and paid for by East Anglia or the IPCC, have discovered that weakening currents look similar to those that happened right before the Little Ice Age, a cold spell observed between about 1600 and 1850 AD. Cycles expert Martin Armstrong cuts through the CYA hype and says global cooling is in fact real. Is there a major temperature low coming around 2046 or so? While NASA, he begins, has now confirmed that the outer atmosphere is getting cooler, it seems desperately insane for people to keep denying the possibility that it's global cooling taking place rather than global warming, when the former brings famine and the latter brings economic expansion as civilizations rise. The rise of Rome was due to global warming, not the man-made kind, mind you. As was the case after the Dark Age, and they call that the medieval warming period between AD 950 and 1300. But the concern from just a technical model perspective is that the warming period we have enjoyed post-1600 and the low of the Little Ice Age has not exceeded that of the medieval warming period. So if we simply look at this chart from a technical perspective, it appears that we've been more or less in a grand downtrend for the past 6,000 years, which is deeply concerning, because we tend to have these periods when civilization turns downward, and they tend to correspond with colder temperatures, shorter growing seasons, and famines. Consider what we've seen lately. In Australia, just 1 week from summer, it's still snowing on Victoria. In fact, one of the top NASA scientists has broken camp and warned that the surface temperature of the sun, cyclical in nature, has collapsed so much that he fears a new ice age is upon us. Professor Valentina Zarkova, who's been saying something similar for several years, is now saying that this downturn probably will end up being worse than even she's forecast, and last longer, too. And meanwhile, of course, the U.S. Northeast has had the coldest Thanksgiving in 150 years. Martin Armstrong goes on to regale us with a lot of history, including from the U.S. in the 1700s and 1800s, the kind of thing that the solar cooling deniers would have you ignore, but it's no secret to listeners here. The problem, he says, is that this time around it's not just the severity of the cold, in other words, it's not a one-day event that's getting to people, it's the duration. And if the people who can see cycles are right, and if the trend thus continues next winter, we will have exceeded any short-term reactionary trend, and we'll be looking ahead to see whether the decline ends by 2028 initially or not. but by then it'll be obvious that man-made global warming was a farce and a lie, which is what all of us should have known when we heard the term settled science anyway. We'll be right back. Now to the second segment for this evening, folks. I'm your host, Mark Call. And given all the events of the past week and the fact that more and more things once called conspiracy theories are now proving to be real facts that the waste stream doesn't want you to know and can't hide for much longer, it's a good time to pick up on the theme of treasonous criminals masquerading as law enforcement. I guess it all depends on what the meaning of the word law is. I touched on the witch hunt designed to obscure real treason and undermine the concept of an elected executive in the first segment, but if you really want to understand how the rule of law is being destroyed, we need to look in a bit more depth into the history of the most criminal man ever to sit at the head of the FBI, and that's saying quite a bit, Robert Mueller. Lately, of course, he's famous for the never-ending witch hunt, which President Trump on Thursday blasted as, quote, an investigation in search of a crime. And for a couple of years, they've, of course, been in search of evidence, too. But in America with a K, you don't need that anymore. Senate Republicans on Wednesday blocked the latest attempt by progressive socialists to slam dunk a bill that would have protected the Mueller witch hunt from being disbanded by the president by attaching it to a high-priority spending bill. And as Senator Mike Lee of Utah pointed out, the thing was unconstitutional as all get out anyway, but that hasn't stopped them before, because it would require all 100 senators' unanimous consent to unanimously vote yes to ditch it. And now that the witch hunters made it clear he wants to get Roger Stone and Jerome Corsi by hook or by crook, President Trump is once again, says Zero Hedge, lashing out at Mueller and the FBI, declaring that the probe is an investigation in search of a crime, and again highlighting the incredible hypocrisy in the FBI's decision to give the Clintons a complete pass for what he correctly called their atrocious and perhaps subversive crimes. Well, maybe he soft-pedaled that a bit. But he does, at least, finally seem to be pulling out some of the stops. Here were some of the Thursday morning tweets. Did you ever see an investigation more in search of a crime, the president began. At the same time, Mueller and the angry Democrats aren't even looking at the atrocious and perhaps subversive crimes that were committed by crooked Hitlery and the Democrats. A total disgrace. He followed that up by asking, when will this illegal Joseph McCarthy-style witch hunt, one that shattered so many innocent lives, ever end? Or will it just go on forever? After wasting more than $40 million, is that possible? It has proven only one thing, that there was no collusion with Russia. So ridiculous. Last night concludes this first in a series of stories. President Trump threatened to release a treasure trove of devastating classified documents about the Mueller probe if Democrats follow through with their threatened so-called investigations. And yeah, I gotta ask, why haven't they already been released? And he also declared that a pardon for soon-to-be-sentenced former Trump campaign executive Paul Manafort was still on the table. But the tweet that's getting more attention was actually a retweet. President Trump on Wednesday shared an image implying what we've known for a long time, that there are a whole bunch of criminals masquerading as law enforcement and politicians who ought to be facing trial for treason. The image, which the president retweeted from a pro-Trump Twitter account, depicts a host of figures that the president has criticized, all of whom are unindicted co-conspirators. They include former President Barry Sabarco, 2016 Democrat nominee Hitlery, Special Counsel Robert Mueller, former FBI Director, the Whoremeister himself, James Comey, and the former Rapist-in-Chief, Bill Clinton, not to mention their support staff, along with infamous former criminal attorneys general like Loretta Lynchmob and Mr. Fast and Furious, Eric Holder. The caption for the hopefully soon-to-be-viral meme says, now that Russia collusion is a proven lie, when did the trials for treason begin? All of that, though, is basically just a setup for what your host is going to suggest is the heart of the story today, starting with this one. Robert Mueller and his infamously criminal FBI gave the Orgy Island billionaire, you might know the name if you don't get your news from CNN or MSNBC, Jeffrey Epstein, the easy-go treatment, unlike what he's doing with Paul Manafort, Jerome Corsi, and a bunch of far more honorable people. But on Wednesday, the Miami Herald released a whole bunch of details about the high-profile Democrat donor's widespread child sex abuse, including the abuse of dozens, if not hundreds, of teenage girls. It's well documented, begins this summary from Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, that former president and rapist-in-chief Bill Clinton flew unconvicted child sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's private jet many times. And we also know that Robert Mueller was FBI director when Epstein was given his not-even-quite-slap-on-the-wrist, lenient, 13-month jail stint for his years of child sex abuse. By the way, folks, if you go through the math, that turns out to be not even a month apiece for each child sex slave kitty. For those that may have forgotten, Zero Hedge, TGP, and others provide some background. From June 2016, for example, convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's infamous Sex Slave Island, or Orgy Island, as some prefer to call it, it's also known as Little St. James Island, appears to be somewhat of a gathering place, and it's a well-desired hangout among key figureheads, actors, and royalty, including the likes of the former U.S. President, rapist-in-chief Bill Clinton, the above-reproach actor, Kevin Spacey, and even Prince Andrew. And no, those attending the lavish residence don't go there to discuss, quote, cutting-edge scientific and medical research, as the Epstein Six Foundation would have you believe. He's right up there, I guess, with George Soros. But instead, they seem to go there to experience full-on sexual encounters with underage girls. Yeah, kind of like what you saw in the Tom Cruise film Eyes Wide Shut. Although, for reasons that are finally becoming clear, the late Stanley Kubrick had to remove the scenes depicting child sex slavery. But as of 2016, the goings-on at Little St. James Island were finally being exposed. The cat is out of the bag, as they put it. Oh, and one more quick aside here, folks. All of this does help explain why Harvey Weinstein is getting all the press and Hollywood Me Too focus rather than the likes of Jeffrey Epstein and his buddy buddies. While there's no shortage of overlap here in the players, there's a real not-so-subtle attempt to divert any focus away from underage children and outright sex slavery. Oh, and have you noticed how the left is oh-so-anxious to call 25-year-olds with beards children if they're looking to illegally immigrate and or kill for ISIS? While they have no problem whatsoever with 14-year-old boys and girls being allowed to make informed choices about who they sleep with or even whether they whack off certain of their body parts? Yeah, there's no shortage of hypocrisy on this front either. Still, though, the corruption in this arena goes way further back. In 2005, police conducted an 11-month undercover investigation on Epstein and his estate after the mother of a 14-year-old girl went to police, suspecting that her daughter had been paid $300 for at least one sexual act on the island, in which she was ordered to strip and then give Big Brother Jeffrey a massage. Although police found tons of photos of young women on the island and even interviewed eyewitnesses, Epstein was hit with that mere slap on the wrist after being forced to plead guilty to only a single charge of prostitution. Hey, I bet Paul Manafort wishes he could get a deal like that. Epstein later served 13 months out of his 18-month minimal service in jail, if you can put Club Fed in the same league with real prisons. And there's a lot more on his history, but let's skip ahead. Flight records indicate that Billy Boy would frequent the island paradise between 2002 and 2005 in particular, while Hitlery, his wife, was a senator in New York. And as the stories put it, nothing to see here, folks. Move along, move along. But now, the new news is corrupt Mueller, yeah, the same guy that's been knee-deep in the Russia, Russia, Russia witch hunt, was the head of the FBI at the time Epstein's case was prosecuted, and it looks like he was even involved in the case. The case was run out of D.C., and 5 months after the plea deal was reached, FBI agents still hadn't interviewed all the victims and or witnesses, nor had they even seen all the physical evidence. Well, maybe that shouldn't surprise us, folks. When it comes to physical evidence, especially if you're on the inside, like Epstein and the entire Bill and Hitlery Dixie Mafia have been, evidence seems to frequently disappear. Sometimes witnesses even end up dead. Right, Seth? Right, Vince? Right, John? There's more support, too, says the story, when it comes to Mueller's corruption. His FBI never even bothered to interview all of the victims, and you have to ask, Does that sound more than a bit familiar by now? But Mueller's FBI did require Epstein to provide information to them as an informant. This is a story from Epstein's 2007 plea deal with the DOJ that required him to inform to the FBI. And there's another question outstanding, too. Was there a separate agreement still undisclosed with the FBI? Because there's an interesting note in the May 24th of 2018 FBI Vault release, quote, Epstein has also provided information to the FBI as agreed upon. And you got to wonder, is that why he escaped any serious charges for molesting at least 20 girls? But when it comes to the criminally corrupt Robert Mueller, we're just getting started. Here's another piece from Stefan Stanford at the All News Pipeline under the headline, Is This Rat Finally Cornered? Herr Gestapo, meaning Robert Mueller, has nearly single-handedly destroyed so-called justice in America as the globalist attempted coup continues. Not only is the guy a rat, begins Stanford, he's a demon with a capital D, dressed up by the demoncrats in sheep's clothing. Mueller, in fact, has been orchestrating the cover-up of deep state and Clinton crime family crimes as head of the FBI from 2001 to 2013, and as John C. Velasek perfectly pointed out in his recent piece for ANP on September 4th, the long history of crooked cop Mueller shows corruption years before even his 9/11 cover-up. No wonder the guy has been referred to as the Fixer. And while Wikipedia misleadingly calls Mueller a so-called conservative Republican, hey, so is Jeff Flake and the late John McCain, and let's not forget Paul Ryan, he's one of a long list of so-called Republicans who long ago sold out America while embracing globalism, and as Velasek points out, while Democrats ignore real treason and instead scream it out about President Trump, it was Mueller who long ago sold the nation out to the globalist high bidder. Velasek's story is entitled Profiles in Treason, Robert Mueller, and here's just some of the detail he provides in that story. First, he begins, let's look at some of the histories of this special counsel that progressive socialists have called beyond reproach. And I guess he's also beyond corruption, folks. And he's so far beyond mere reproach that the word doesn't have any meaning. Anyway, the media and establishment rhinos, says Velasek, have assisted in building up Mueller, claiming he's highly competent and fair, while nothing could be further from the truth. In 1979, back before he was head of the criminally corrupt FBI, this paragon of virtue prosecuted the 18 San Francisco Hells Angels as drug runners. And in what was considered a slam-dunk case, he managed to lose 13 convictions, and the 5 convictions he did receive were overturned on appeal. And the case was so badly prepared that there were no convictions on appeal by the prosecutor that replaced the scumbag. From San Francisco, where else, Mueller scurried off to Boston, where he then bungled a case that seems to have resonated in the future as well, an East German accused of the theft of nuclear secrets. It was also in Boston where Mueller hired mob boss, the late Whitey Bulger, as an informant. And horrific crimes performed by Bulger and his henchmen were covered up by his FBI handler, John Connolly, with the acquiescence of Mueller. And instead, Mueller managed to charge 4 innocent men for the crimes that his informant Bulger and his mob had committed. All 4 were later exonerated, and the families were awarded $100 million of taxpayer money, the first of many hundreds of millions that Mueller's managed to waste. During the trial, Mueller was found to have suppressed evidence clearing those 4 victims, and that too is a pattern we've gotten more than used to, as both the Bundy and Hammond families can confirm. Evidently, Mueller pioneered it, and his protege Comey perfected it. It's also not the only time he's brought forth false information and was not indicted because of his deep state buddies and cronies in the federal justice system. This, says the story, was also the same Robert Mueller that falsely accused virologist Steve Hatfield during the anthrax virus scare, where again Mueller withheld evidence. Hatfield also sued. He was awarded almost $6 million of taxpayer money. And yes, it was the same Robert Mueller who claimed it was too dangerous to go to Benghazi after the ambassador there and 4 brave men were murdered, fast and furiously, even. You may recall Representative Trey Gowdy's rhetorical question to the scumbag Mueller. Why is it too dangerous for them to go to Benghazi, but it's safe for our diplomats? And yes, this is also the very same Robert Mueller who worked with various Islamic organizations to rid FBI training manuals of any mention of real terrorism and genuine jihad, and purge much intel from the FBI database about these same groups operating in the USA. Meeting in secret and exposed afterward by Judicial Watch, Mueller met with groups including CARE and INSA and other terrorist-connected organizations and gave in to every single demand from these groups to effectively ban the terrorist training that some might have thought FBI field agents would actually need if the goal was to stop terrorists rather than create false flags. And yes, folks, that's the way your host would prefer to put it. This is also the same Robert Mueller, says the article, who worked to block the 9/11 families from being able to sue Saudi Arabia for at least allegedly being the masterminds behind the attack on 9/11. Some suggest that Mueller might have been covering up a lot more than even that, and that indeed that was the reason he was put into the FBI position literally just days before the most infamous false flag in U.S. history. So I guess you do have to give him this. He may not be good at prosecuting actual crimes or even fabricating them effectively for the witch hunt, but when it comes to covering up treason, he is unparalleled. Stephen Stanford points out that when Hitlery and Barry Sotero committed their long laundry list of crimes against America, up to and including treason, things like arming enemies, including ISIS, who used the weaponry given to them to slaughter innocent Muslims and Christians in Syria, Iraq, and elsewhere, as well as arming Russia via the Uranium One scandal, and Robert Mueller was knee-deep in that, and another one we'll get to, the fact that they were never charged or even investigated, while the crooked cop himself, Mueller, and the Democrat Party spent nearly the last 2 years wasting millions of dollars of the American taxpayers' money in the phony Russia, Russia, Russia collusion scam, speaks volumes. As William B. Stecker pointed out in his story earlier concerning Herr Gestapo Mueller, as he put it, the man became FBI director 1 week before the false flag known as 9/11, when honorable field agents were trying to warn the higher-ups in the FBI about those terrorists who allegedly carried out the attacks. Their pleas, though, fell on deaf ears, and none deafer than Mueller's. And furthermore, Gestapo Mueller orchestrated the cover-up that followed those attacks, and for this alone, says Stecker, he deserves the death penalty. Unquote. So back to John Velasek, who says, with all of this as background, is it any wonder that Mueller allowed his pit bull, Andrew Weissman, to break into Paul Manafort's house at 4 a.m., rough up the entire family, including his wife, who was still in bed, illegally steal attorney-client privileged information and personal documents in violation of the Fourth Amendment? Mueller, he continues, has a long history only partially demonstrated by the above of using not only virtually false evidence but heavy-handed fabricated evidence to ensnare those the deep state needs to have damaged and destroyed. Mueller's history of failure would have gotten any lesser attorney fired, but being a deep state operative, Mueller is shielded and allowed to move even further up the deep state pecking order, including as far as being FBI director. This was not a position based on his fine performance, unless, that is, you count covering up evidence, but because Mueller is malleable, able to be controlled by those deepest in the swamp. This is the man, he continues, that the progressive socialists, the sycophants in the media who play the lapdogs of the deep state, the rhinos and the never-Trumpers want us to believe. But they've yet to explain how Donald Trump, who, according to leftist snowflakes, is a Nazi and not intelligent enough to be our president, had the capability to collude with the dreaded Ruskies in such a sophisticated way that even our best intelligence agencies, yeah, sure, can't figure out just how he did it or even come up with any evidence. And let's remember, folks, it's not like the case with Bill and Hitlery, where they've been caught time after time removing documents from the White House, having witnesses silenced, having buildings coincidentally blown up and evidence destroyed. And yes, being allowed by the FBI to literally bleach bit and hammer physical disk drives into submission in order to cover up crimes the likes of which, well, we have a pretty good clue, even if, kind of like we've seen with other mafia organizations, it's difficult to get people to testify against them. And there's more. Velasek's story didn't even touch upon Robert Mueller's role in the Hillary-Clinton selling of U.S. uranium to Russia, a.k.a. Uranium One, that would have been front-page news if we still had an honest press. But Hitlery and her minions weren't just selling uranium to the Ruskies. As the Gateway Pundit and others have reported since March, it was Hitlery herself who gave Russia U.S. technology for their new unstoppable hypersonic ICBMs, traveling more than 20 times the speed of sound with almost unlimited range, and with tensions now heating up between the Ukraine and Russia once again, and Nazi Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko recently warning of an all-out war between the Ukraine and Russia, should World War III begin and the United States be destroyed, even though it might be a bit too late, folks who know what was going on would blame Hitlery and her ilk. The UK's Examiner reported on a shocking set of emails showing the nexus between Bill and Hillary Clinton's foundation, the Hillary Clinton State Department, Bill Clinton, Russian oligarchs Vekselberg and Skolkovo, a.k.a. Russia's Silicon Valley, and a Putin project to transfer Western technology to Russia that was championed and driven by none other than Mrs. Clinton. And what do you know? They note, 17 out of 28 various tech companies that hitched up with Skolkovo also contributed to the Clinton Foundation. And if you do want to transfer state secrets, no doubt they've got a lot of ways, but how better than just to have a drop box that's accessible to everybody who's got the almost but not quite public key to the private email server? What a coincidence. And furthermore, Barack Obama's support for Russian membership in the WTO made the whole global flow so much easier. No wonder FBI Director Whoremeister James Comey and the Uniparty Congress never noticed a thing. Fast forward concludes the story to November 2016, just after Donald Trump was elected president, when the Air Force released a report on, are you sitting down, the Russian and Chinese hypersonic missile threat to the United States. They're vulnerable, it said, to hypersonic missiles from both superpowers, and they're falling behind in the technology race, according to that new Air Force study, because the People's Republic of China and Russian Federation at that point were already flight testing high-speed maneuvering weapons, or HSMWs, that may endanger both forward-deployed U.S. forces and even the continental United States itself, says the executive summary. So yes, folks, the treason continues to be unpunished, while the witch hunt to punish the innocent continues apace. And if that doesn't speak volumes, we don't have to wonder what would. We just have to pray we won't see the mushroom clouds that some have been selling us out to deliver. So let's close with war on the economic front. China and Russia, says a headline from the South China Morning Post, are more openly trying to ditch the dollar with a new payment system, an alternative to SWIFT, in a move to use their own currencies for bilateral trade and sidestep U.S. sanctions, underscoring their intent to cut their reliance on the almighty U.S. fiat dollar. The development of this new international financial payment system aims to address rising concerns, they say, over additional U.S. sanctions and trade tariffs. Most recently, Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, during his visit to China earlier in November, said the two nations were discussing the launch of their new cross-border system for direct payment of trade invoices in both the yuan and the ruble. He noted that discussions have been underway to allow the use of the China UnionPay credit card in Russia and Russia's Mir card in China. Of course, as you probably are aware, folks, the impetus for this new financial infrastructure is the continued deterioration in both countries' relations with the United States and what they claim is the threat that Washington will impose even more economic sanctions on one or both of them. Now, here's where your host stops and says, remember, this has been literally years in the making, in spite of the fact that the SCMP is trying to make it sound like it's all of a sudden new. Said Medvedev, ahead of the 22nd regular meeting of Chinese and Russian heads of government, quote, the Chinese should protect their system, while Russia should protect its own system. And in this respect, this kind of cooperation is very useful, because in this situation, no one, and hear this carefully, folks, no one will be able to block the development of financial traffic. Guess who that means? And Medvedev emphasized that the payment system initiative was intended to be an alternative to the American SWIFT system, a dollar-denominated financial system that basically enforces the use of the U.S. dollar. Quote, no one currency should dominate the market, he said, because all of this makes us dependent on the economic situation in the country that issues this reserve currency, even when we're talking about a strong currency like the one in the United States. He added, I want to say something that may raise a few eyebrows, but I think that some of these U.S. sanctions are good or useful because they forced us to do what we should have done 10 years ago, unquote. And in fact, what they've probably been planning for longer than that, and certainly been working on for a number of years now. Trading for rubles, he said, is our absolute priority. Also, your host notes again, while this article doesn't mention it, both China and Russia have been buying gold, physical gold, not the paper imitation, mind you, hand over fist for quite a few years at this point, too. And since the SWIFT payment system is all about forcing fiat dollars on the world, exclusion from this current system is, in fact, a powerful weapon that Washington could use, and indeed has used, to punish anyone that the deep state in Washington doesn't like. And all of this is just one more reminder of what inevitably always happens to fiat currencies. And again, forewarned is forearmed.